quite some time.
No, I could have done that, I suppose, but no, I'm actually going to record it. This, I've got a little, great little microphone here that, let's see if we're going to pick up. Adjusting the image. There we go. All right, so this is, I realize that this is probably perhaps the greatest example of the internet generation. It's incredibly self-indulgent. I'm going to tell you about myself and my blog for the next 20 minutes. I mean, I can't think of anything more appropriate for the internet, but please drag me into something relevant if you can. So Targaman, whoopsie, how do I go back? There we go. Targaman is a handle I got years ago with eWorld. If anybody remembers Apple eWorld, I had created an email account and I called myself OT Man. And Gary Rensburg, that some of you know, was my undergraduate advisor. I saw him at SBL and he goes, well, Chris, you're working in Targum now. You should call yourself Matergaman. I was like, well, Matergaman is a little too obscure, so I'm going to go with Targaman. So this is how Targaman comes about, and an online friend of mine who knows nothing about biblical material but is a comic artist created my Superman logo there. I, too, have lost the earliest stages. My brother, actually, who's in a completely different field but also is very present online, went back and found all sorts of things. And the oldest we could find was something from 2005. The official first post is, in fact, January 2006. But I know I've been blogging in various ways going back to 2003, 2004. I was director of Jewish studies at Tulane University from 97 to 2003. And then from 2003 to 2006, I was director of the honors program at Tulane. And in 2006, I moved to Penn State, where I am now as dean of the Schreyer Honors College. And when I made that transition in 2003 into honors, I started an honors blog at Tulane. So I knew I had that. Then I was looking at things like Paleo-Judaica, and I wanted to, I thought I wanted to do some of that. Whoop, I'm getting ahead of myself. I need to swipe correctly. There we go. And initially, I thought I wanted to be anonymous and say anonymous things. And in fact, I found out that Blogger Pseudonymous was available as a username. It isn't any longer. I let it go, and somebody else has squatted on it. There's nothing posted there at pseudonymous.blogspot.com. But I had it for about a week or two. Now, one of the things I realized pretty quickly is that if I wanted to drive people to anonymous, I would have to, or pseudonymous, I would have to, as myself, go and tell people, hey, here's a good blog you should really look at. I don't know if you all remember Ross Ulbricht, who created Silk Road. That's how they caught him. He was Dread Pirate Roberts, and the way they caught Dread Pirate Roberts is they found the earliest reference to Dread Pirate Roberts on a bulletin board, and it was by a guy named Ross Ulbricht. Now, I was not creating a site for selling illicit material that would ultimately kill people and eventually lead this man to try and take out hits on five different people. It was a little more subtle, like I wanted people to hear the great things I had to say about the Targum to Lamentations. Nobody was going to follow that. So in the end, it was ego and honesty that drove me to pretty quickly actually come out, which is the ego bit is, if I said something good, I wanted people to know that I had said it. If I created something good, I wanted to be able to use it later on. It just made no sense for me to be anonymous or pseudonymous. And the other thing too is as I played around with it just for a few weeks, I thought, this is not a very honest approach to take, right? I mean, there are times in life where I think it's not inappropriate in different contexts for remaining anonymous and maintaining anonymity. This isn't one of them, for crying out loud. It's a little blog. So then I had to think about what my focus would be. For those of you who know me, I am not a very focused person. I got interests all over the place, and it's hard for me to focus my attention on just about anything. But I would look at things like Paleo-Judaica, and Ed Cook at the time, his was a little bit more broad, and Ralph the Sacred River, he was blogging. And in the end, I gave up. And I just said, you know what, here's my blog. I'm going to blog about things that interest me. And at some point, I'll look back, and it will say something about who I am. And that's sort of where we are with this, is looking back, to see who I am, and it's reflecting who I am. So this is a screen cap of Target Man today. At the top, you can see the things that are there, and I'm going to briefly talk about them. But that's it. Like I said, this is as egocentric, I think, as any paper here is going to get. But it is kind of interesting to look back and reflect and see where I am. I did first start on the research side of things, you know, true bibloblogger. And so a lot of my material you can find, Targum Lamentations had pretty much finished by that point for me, although I was giving a couple of papers now and then, and I would share some of that. But Targum Ruth was the project I was really working on. And in fact, the book will be done in 3 weeks. It won't be published for a while, but all my bits will be in the hands of the editors within 3 weeks. And actually, in the process of that, I shared the outline. So if you were to go to that Targum Ruth bullet, you'll see the outline. Any articles, I would at least put the references. If I couldn't put the full copy to the articles up, I would use the blog to put drafts of ideas and thoughts. Gary Rensberg, I mentioned earlier, and Todd Linnefelt both had written a couple little pieces that were intriguing about the how Naomi and Boaz's Hebrew is a more archaic form than you find in the rest of the book. And they were arguing that this is a way that the author uses to emphasize the age discrepancy, that Boaz and Naomi are more of a similar age than Ruth, for example. So I put some things up there asking people about that and got some good feedback. And then I'd put some more specifically on the Targum. And I really, that kind of interaction has been great because there aren't a whole lot of people who do Targum. In fact, they're all in another room in another hotel right now in the Aramaic study session. And this has been incredibly useful to me, not just because, not least because of the academic feedback and input. Because not all, you know, Moshe Bernstein is not reading my blog, right? You know, Ed does, Ed Cook does. There are some folks there, but it's pretty isolating. I mean, I have great colleagues at Penn State now. I was the only guy doing this kind of stuff at Tulane, but at Penn State we've got other great Hebrew Bible people, and Daniel Falk is with us now, who does Qumran and so forth. And so we have lunch and we can talk. But to know that there's a broader community and to get that kind of interaction, and actually the educated laity is often really helpful because they're asking some questions that are probably obvious, but we often, or at least I often, get too deep down into my own issues. So that's been really helpful. And I'll comment on the theology of suffering here in a little bit. Photography is one of my passions. And so at first I started posting there. This, any Formula One fans? No? All right. Well, this was the U.S. Grand Prix last month. First Grand Prix I've ever gone to in person. That's Lewis Hamilton, the British driver driving for Mercedes. And this is his penultimate lap, and he won his third world title on that race. But so I have an offshoot blog where all my photo stuff is, and that's part of who I am. I like comics. I like humor. I actually have become, partly through the blog, friends with a number of cartoonists. I can't say I'm close with Peraro. That's a funny one. Coffee with Jesus is a kind of poignant one. One or two SBLs ago, they had a collection of their comics for sale. But again, it's reflecting part of who I am. And so there's some silliness, there's some fun out there. And there's an openness, I try to have an openness to all shades of ridicule, frankly. I think partly we'll talk about crazies, I'll refer to some comments. Part of it is just, you know, if you're gonna put yourself out there, you've gotta be willing to have a few slings and arrows. Just do your best and to make them nerf, you know? I mean, that's my sort of approach to it. And then, this happened. That's our son, Mac. So Mac passed away 3 years ago this New Year's Eve. Excuse me. And I posted about it. I posted the very next day. And a number of you in this room responded amazingly. Thousands and thousands of people responded, which was incredible. And I had a post I'll come back to, the best boy ever. And this really was a community at its best. Joel Watts posted this. I had actually no idea about any of this until a week or so later. He called for a moment of silence at 10 a.m. that Friday. And in fact, it wasn't until I read this that I realized the reason for that was it was the beginning of Mac's funeral. And I'll be honest with you, I had kind of forgotten that it was a Friday. I thought it was a Saturday that the funeral was. To let you know, by the way, Mac, our son, it was 2 weeks shy of his ninth birthday. It was sepsis. Came out of the blue. Sepsis is something that it looks like just like the flu. And if you're in the hospital and they catch it, you have about a 50% survival rate. If you're not in the hospital, it's basically 98-99%. In fact, I had one of my students come up to me the beginning of this semester. He lives in our dorm, and I'd seen him. He has no legs. He has no right arm here, and his left arm, conveniently or inconveniently, he has no fingers except the middle finger. I kid you not. Sean, a neat young man, came up to me after a service where I had preached for the university and told me that his story was exactly my son's. But he's that rare case that survived, but that's how he survived, with no limbs, basically. A neat, wonderful kid who, I will tell you, humor, I embarrassed myself immensely last fall because I'm walking into the office, he's walking out to class, and it's like February and it's snowing out and everything else, and he's walking out in shorts. And I said, dude, you're going to be cold. No, I guess it's not a problem. Because he's got shorts on, because he's got prosthetics down below. And he's like, no, I'm good. This is one of the benefits. I mean, a great guy, you know, and you need people like that in your life. This was an amazing time for us, an amazingly difficult time, but also an amazingly powerful one, to feel that support and encouragement. And I know that we've seen this in our online world, where we've seen faculty who have lost positions or been challenged in their positions, and that's led to a lot of pushback and feedback, or at least notice, right? Peter's position, for example. And sometimes I don't think we handle it all that well, and I'm going to allude to that in a minute. Here's one, though, for example, you know, the power of a blog, to share your thoughts. So this was actually 12 January, so less than 2 weeks after Mac died. And one of the things I wanted to address here, and this is where I got into the theology of suffering, which, you know, you spend a dozen years on Lamentations, right, and studying Jewish and Christian responses to lament. I was about as prepared as anybody could be theologically for what would occur. But one of the things I responded to here was I posted something, a couple of things that I didn't, that I wanted to sort of correct. And I said, you know, I understand when people say things to me like, he's an angel now, or God meant this for a reason, God has a purpose for it, we just haven't figured it out. When people say that to me, I say thank you, because they mean it lovingly. But this is also my field, and I felt a responsibility to respond. So I responded here, and I'll just quickly mention the fact there are lots and lots of responses. This guy, Theology Archaeology, decided to just rip me apart. Why do parents think their child is immune to the rules that govern life, and so forth and so on? Then Tim, who happens to be a Penn State Scholar alumnus, one of our scholars, but is a pastor now, Tim took him on. And then he said, this guy comes back in, and he says, I also found this other thread title, Greatest Child Ever, to be insulting to all parents of the world, past, present, and future, plus insulting to his daughter. Izzy, my daughter, who's here, said, eh, not so much, Dad. Anyway, you said best boy ever. And so this woman, Liza, takes after him and so forth. And then Diane takes after him. And, you know, then H takes after him. And it was, here's how you take care of crazies, is you let kind people just pull the weight for you. I mean, and then I come in and respond and say, you know, I have further developed this, and Ruth is being completed as that book, and I'm now working on a book on the biblical theology of suffering and grace. And it's not going to be a critical work, things like that. It's something for pastors and folks, and actually I remember within a couple of nights, my wife was reading, I just blanked it, oh, come on, why do good things happen, bad things happen to good people, Kushner. And my wife is saying, you know, she's telling me stuff. I go, no, I know. And she says, why do you keep saying I know? I said, honey, because I read all this a decade ago, and I gave you the book, right? But one of Kushner's comments is he talks about, this is a bit of an aside, one of Kushner's comments is he remembers being in a hotel room with one of his congregants, and a Christian man is trying to console a woman whose son had just died in operation. And says, you know, God doesn't give us anything that we're not strong enough to handle. And she says, so if I had been a little weaker, my son would have lived. This is the kind of thing that I want to address. This to me, was actually really affirming. you know, I post this, and you know, on the will of God and what is the will of God, and I got incredible feedback and support, and not all sorts of agreement. A lot of people disagreed. One of the other things I had had since I was a freshman, I won't go into it, but since I was a freshman in college, I'd had some thoughts about some. My name is a little, maybe my field and name are a little incongruent. Christian Brady, Jewish Studies, Rabbinic Literature. I'm not Jewish. You know, so growing up a Christian, what happens when we die? I mean, for crying out loud, Jesus is supposed to come again. It's been longer now of Jesus' time than most conservative estimates from Abraham to Jesus. What the heck's going on? And I had some thoughts about what happens when, and I posted them. In fact, I posted them long before Mac died, and I reposted them on the blog. And this fellow who's just a retired guy living in Chesapeake, Virginia, started commenting, and he said, oh, you must have been reading Emil Brunner. This fellow's not a pastor or anything else. I said, I got to say, and now I'm entirely embarrassed now that I've gone and read a bunch of Brunner, but I had no idea who Brunner was. Right? I wasn't trained as a theologian. I was a textual scholar and so forth. Wow. A whole world opened up to me. Now, a lot of people think the things that Brunner says are not exactly orthodox. A lot of things people think the things I'm saying are not entirely orthodox. And I think that's relevant here, and I'll come back to that in the next slide. But I wanted to have a word about this, living in the blogosphere. So this picture, these pictures, I should say, were, this was an article that was on the Chronicle of Higher Education. A fellow reporter came up from DC, met with me, interviewed a couple of other folks. As academics who have personal identities on Twitter and blogs, as well as professional ones. One of the decisions I had to make with that blog, remember I talked about ego and honesty? Because it's a fair amount of both. I wanted to argument, that's just going to be who I am. And when people hire me, they're going to know far more about me than any other candidate they're going to interview, whether they like it or not. And that may hurt me. But I'd rather be hired and be who I am for who I am than, you know, protecting that external image. And this is, so this is one of the discussions that we could have that I think is important to have about how do we present ourselves? What do we say about ourselves when we're out there? And basically, at SHC Dean on Twitter or engage.shc.psu.edu, those are my professional identities. It's who I am, but that's where I'm going to talk about honors in Penn State and Penn State soccer too. Targuman, that's me. That's all of me. Now, I'm also not the kind of person who's going to post inflammatory things. Like, I don't see, is Jim West not at the conference this year? I mean, okay. I mean, Jim won't mind my calling him out, right? Jim, we all, if you're online at all with the biblioblogging world, you know Jim West. To call Jim a gadfly isn't quite right. Where's that velociraptor you had up there? That's a little more like Jim. He tears into things for the joy of it, you know? So that's not me anyway. But so the last comments I wanted to make about the blogging world and so forth, we have a new speech policy at SBL. Now, in fairness to SBL, it is circumscribed. It is about how we behave here at meetings, at conferences, and so forth. But it has sent a chilling wave over much of the blogging world. And, you know, I posted it when I received it from John Kutzko, and the other folks are good people. They're trying to do good things. But I think one of the great values of the blogging world is that it does provide a platform for us, for everybody, to be out there and be a voice. As I've said, some of the best critical feedback I've actually gotten has not come from scholars and critics. It hasn't come from being here. It's been from lay people hearing, reading what I'm writing, and saying, well, that doesn't make sense with my experience, or what about this, what about that? I'm not saying you can do your work only on a blog and so forth, but that's a really important voice. And there's a lot of important feedback, people criticizing and so forth, and that's fine. And I think, by and large, it's self-determining how it works. There are true crazies, I think will be talked about later, that frankly, you got to call the police and you got to hire lawyers. But otherwise, don't go to their blogs. Don't repost their tweets, right? I mean, if you ignore them, that's the surest way to get rid of a troll. And I don't think we need folks to guard our minds and guard our blogs. And that's, to me, a lot of the power is to be able to get out there. And I wanted an excuse to be able to use my picture of gummy bears on my PowerBook. So, thank you. I told you it was going to be incredibly self-indulgent. So.
For the folks in the back, there's some seats over on this side.
I can't imagine you have any questions for me, but I am open to them.
I'm sure there are. And here's
Thank you very much for your talk. I appreciate it. This is sort of an educated layperson's question or comment. So raise yourself. What's your opinion about Facebook?
So the question is, what's my opinion of Facebook? Facebook is interesting for me because Tulane got on Facebook fairly early. When Harvard, Stanford, I think Tulane was the next in about five other schools. It was students who said, Dr. Brady, you should be on Facebook because all our students are there. So Facebook started for me as a professional platform rather than a personal platform. Now I've got all sorts of friends and so forth. It's just another tool. It is really great to keep in. I saw Gregory Spinner, a colleague, we were together 2 years at Tulane, had dinner last night, hadn't really seen him in about 15 years, but we've stayed in touch through Facebook. I think those kind of things are great for that. Part of, I think, what led to this SBL statement was a Facebook group that was created that had SBL in its title. It got inflammatory. Some folks took it over, which I'm not a huge fan of that either. They took it over and then wrested it away from that person and sanctified it. And you know, so it is what it is. It's just a tool. And it can be twisted. It can be used. I don't think we should expect too much out of it. I certainly don't think we should expect honesty and integrity from the people who own it and run it. I think you should be wary and cautious of what you put up there. As scholars, one of the things I should say, I don't put full copies of things I'm actually going to publish and things like that out yet. I wait until I've finished it, and it goes through the normal vetting process, and then when the publisher, whomever, says we can put it, we can put it, because people can take stuff, and that's one of the things you'll find in Facebook is, you know, grabbing resources and just taking them as your own. So I don't know if that gets at some of your questions.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
Do you use Facebook to drive your blog at all?
I have my blog dump into Facebook. Yeah, and actually that was a difficult decision for me because, like I said, Target Man is me. Facebook is lots and lots of students follow me on Facebook, so that's much more of a professional thing. I do block my mother, by the way. Oh, I mean, she actually follows, but I have to go in and delete almost everything she says. She and her sister, my aunt, had a tiff about whether or not they're coming to my grandmother's 97th birthday party next month. And I'm like, why is this underneath my announcement of going to SBL? It had nothing to do with it. But I debated for a long time whether Target Man would automatically dump into Facebook, which it does.
So when you post to your blog,
it goes there. Yeah. So, yeah.
On your the personal and professional personas, a lot of people already have the ball they're rolling when they take up blogging. Some people already have a pretty extensive online persona before they get into their careers. I know there are a lot of kids in undergrads and even graduate school right now who are saying you've got to delete your online presence before you start submitting apps to grad schools, to jobs and things like that. Do you think you could comment on your experience at the university atmosphere?
Absolutely. So we have a presidential leadership academy at Penn State in the Honors College, and we take 30 students as rising sophomores. Next month, in January, we'll start interviewing these students. And one of the things I do in the interview is I pull up their Facebook accounts. And we then later tell our students, yeah, you need to go back through. And frankly, a lot of the students have to delete stuff. Now, I was older when I started online, and so I came into it, and so I'm not worried about the things that I put up. I worry every now and then what somebody puts on Wikipedia article about me. So far, it's mostly factual, but they get the facts wrong. But I advise students as early as possible to think about what you're putting up there, because it's discoverable. I've had lots and lots of my students who go into job interviews, especially with places like KPMG and Deloitte, these consulting firms, and they will spin a notebook around, put it in front of you, and say, log into your Facebook account. So it's not just what can the public see. They want to see what you've put on that only your friends can see. Now, if you don't have to do that if you don't want to, but you're not going to get that job. So we actually do quite a lot of discussion with our students about how they manage online personas and where they take it. Yeah, Jeff.
Christian, anything else?
Just shut me down when you need to.
Try staying purist on a blog, in terms of just your professional content. And to facilitate that, let me say a confession. I fall at your feet in apologies. And when I was more active blogging, you know, 8 years ago, I had 20, 30 blogs, you know, on my feed because everything was so on topic. Mm-hmm. There were some, and my confession is yours is one of them at some point. I dropped it because mm-hmm. of the, you know, just keeping up with the personal versus the on-topic, you know, professional stuff.
Well, it's funny, yeah, Joe, because I knew when I decided not to be focused that it would mean I would not have as many followers as, say, Jim, you know, and others with their real focused blogs. I knew that. But it wasn't about trying to create a persona. I really wasn't that sort of public. It wasn't trying to be focused. Now, you know, maybe if I was as published as our panelists, you know, then I could have a very focused you know, the press could help me and that kind of stuff, you know, the publisher could help me. But I wanted to be who I am. So instead, I use tags so that if somebody really wanted to pull just the feed on Targum Ruth, you can do that. And you'll only get notified when I post Targum Ruth stuff. So feelings are not hurt. And I watched that happen, that as I moved to, thank you, as I moved away. So my wife is a journaler. She has written journals since she was certainly in college, maybe earlier. And that's been invaluable to her. I don't have that kind of discipline until you make it Fruit Loops. It's like, I don't want to eat breakfast until you make it sugary and so forth. So this is my journal in many ways. Now, since Mac died, actually, I do keep a pretty regular journal that doesn't go up there, because I realize there's actually a lot of stuff I'm thinking through that I don't want to immediately regurgitate out into the world. But that's what this was, and I have found the same joy that she has. When she sits down and takes out her journals to read about when we were first married living in England, she goes, I can't believe you said that to me. We'd been married 6 weeks, and you said that. You know, so it's nice to have these things to read back on. So I'm not worried about that, but I understand why people remove me. So one more, or how many?
Yeah, I think time for one more. I'm struck in your presentation, from what I can see from your blog, that it's very visually well-balanced, beautiful pictures and font. A lot of blogs are a bit of an eyesore. Is that just something that's come naturally to you, or have you got to study that to get help? You know, because I did think it's a visual medium as much as words. So I'm just interested in how you go. It seems to be a pretty swish presentation.
Well, thank you. It's a hobby. I mean, it's something that I like. So photography, visual arts, these are things that I like. I don't consider myself very good, so I'm a cheapskate. So I go and find the cheapest but nicest WordPress theme that I can find. If you go to targuman.org, that's sort of my landing page. My photographs, and there's a Flickr account and so forth. You all are welcome to use them. Give me, you know, just the credit that these are my pictures. But, you know, that's the nicest thing anybody said to me in a long, long time. So thank you. It's just something that it's a passion. I tweak it. I twiddle with it. I play with it. I do think, so, and I will say this, the staff in the Honors College will tell you it can be a little irritating. We have really nice material. But part of the reason we have really nice material is because I insist on seeing everything. I don't pretend to be the best at it, but I get other people to look at it and so forth. And the reason I do it is because it does make a difference. We can pretend that we're scholars. We just want to see the text. We just want to see the research. But it will make a difference. If it looks good, we're going to pay attention to it. And so I do think that that's worthwhile, because some are eyesores, and, you know, and people will skip over them because of that. But thank you. That was the nicest thing anybody said in a long time. Thank you all very much for indulging me.